Hello and welcome to the final edition for the year 2007 of the Marlena program. This is the program for the week of December 31st, 2007. We've got an interesting show for you tonight, and one that I have particularly been wanting to do for some time, and I'm very delighted that it has come to fruition. So what I'd like you to do is sit back, get your beverage of choice, put your feet up, and spend the next couple hours with us right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where you're listening is our business. Oh, yes, indeed, indeed. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. I am Marlena, and this is, in fact, holy moly, where did the year go? The final edition for 2007 of the Marlena program. Before we get too far into the show, let me first apologize to you for a crackling voice. I happen to be still recovering from surgery, and the medication that I take really plays havoc with my voice. And so we will try to be reaching for the button to allow us to clear the throat as often as possible, but one or two may escape into the airwaves of the Ethernet. Now, the program that we have tonight, I am so excited to do this show, and I'm going to hold you in suspense for just a moment longer, because I received today a message of holiday, of good wishes for the new year from ACB's president, Mitch Pomerantz, and I would like to play that for you right now. So let's do that, and then we'll get on with the rest of the show.
This is Mitch Pomerantz, president of the American Council of the Blind. As we stand poised on the threshold of 2008, I want to wish all of you in the ACB radio listening audience the happiest and healthiest of New Year's. Whether you are a member of the American Council of the Blind or not, you are a member of the worldwide blindness community, and as such, share a desire for independence and prosperity for all blind and visually impaired persons wherever they may live. In August 2008, the World Blind Union will hold its quadrennial meeting in Geneva, Switzerland. It will be my first opportunity to attend and participate in the activities and deliberations of the WBU, and I'm truly looking forward to the opportunity to meet and interact with blind leaders from throughout the world. I believe those of us who reside in the so-called developed nations of the world have a responsibility, perhaps even an obligation, to work collaboratively with our blind brothers and sisters living in the developing nations to achieve our common dream of independence and prosperity. As a part of this effort, we need to recognize and respect the cultural and political differences which make the blindness community as diverse and interesting as the larger world community in which we all reside. As we move into the new year, let us all resolve to be less judgmental and more accepting of individual differences among our fellow blind. The American Council of the Blind believes in and celebrates such individual differences as a core component of the grassroots democratic organization it is. And as ACB's president, I want to encourage everyone hearing this message to likewise resolve to embrace this democratic ideal. Let me once again wish everyone a healthy and a happy new year, and may it be your most successful ever. Finally, may you continue listening to the voice of the American Council of the Blind, ACB Radio. Take care.
And that was ACB President Mitch Pomerantz. All right, we are going to get back now to our regularly scheduled show, which actually we all tried to bring to you last week, and it was I who was not able to do the show, and I apologize to all of you, but up until the last minute, I really tried, and it just wasn't going to work out health-wise. However, this week it is, and I'm going to push the button here and bring in my two guests who are awake at 3 in their morning to do this program with us. Jeff Shang and Nama Aris, welcome to the Marlena Show.
Hi, Marlena.
Hi, Marlena. We're glad you're better.
Well, I'm glad you guys are awake.
Holy and so are we.
My goodness gracious. First of all, in all seriousness, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I just felt particularly at this time of year, it would be important to learn and hear what it's like living in Israel, how are blind services in Israel, and, you know, the Western media would have us believe, and I don't know if it's true or not true, that every day you live under the threat of this could be your last day. And so I thought it would be interesting to talk about living in Israel and kind of what that means for two people who have lived in other places. But before we do that, I'd like to step back and chat with each one of you and give you also both an opportunity to talk about the spice rack. What is the spice rack?
Well, the Spice Rack is a weekly show which we do on your sister station, ACB Radio World, and we do it once a week, and it's repeated again. We do it on Tuesdays at 8 GMT, which is 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern, and it's a show that's in English and in Hebrew. The first hour is in English, the second is in Hebrew, and we give a recipe. We talk about the very same things that we're going to talk about here, about Israel, about blindness in Israel. We play lots of music. We talk to our friend Gary Adler from Melbourne, Australia. And the second hour is more of the same, but in Hebrew, and people are welcome to write in and ask questions, because people often have lots of questions about this region of the world, and which we try to give you a taste of life here, which is full of spices all the time.
I would imagine that it is. Now, do you play traditional Israeli music, or what kind of music might we hear?
I don't know whether there is such a thing as traditional Israeli music. Is there, Nama?
Well, actually, I took a course about that. It's funny you should ask. I took a course about that. Is there such a thing as Israeli music? And because Israel is such a young country, we're not even 60 years old, Israeli music is very much in the making, and it's influenced by quite a few genres, such as, you know, the classical Israeli music is influenced obviously by European classical music, and the rock pop music is influenced by modern rock pop music all over the world, as well as by Middle Eastern ethnic music. So, and of course, there's influences of old Jewish music. So, I don't know if there is such a thing as a distinct Israeli music because, like I said, it's very much in the making.
Sure.
And the other thing is, because of the political nature of Israel as being the Jewish homeland, and also because of its young age, you literally do have people from everywhere. I thought Australia was quite a multicultural country, but it kind of pales in comparison to Israel. They really do have people from everywhere. So when you talk about traditional music, it's traditional music from even within Jewry. You've got, you know, the traditional Jewish music from various different parts of the world, and that differs greatly.
That sounds very different, yes. I mean, they say that even the, you know, Gregorian chant, and this is one of the things that I learned in the course, Gregorian chant, which we all kind of know what it sounds like, originated in Yemenite music.
Really?
Kind of. Yes, yes. If you hear really old a cappella Yemenite music, there's something quite similar. So it's very interesting the way music has developed here and in the Western world, but that's a whole other conversation.
And Nama, music, yes. Music is a very important part of your life, isn't it, Nama?
Yeah. I'm an opera singer. I've been an opera singer for many years.
And do you perform in various venues there in Israel?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, I haven't performed as much as I used to since I came back from Australia, but hopefully that will change. I perform in different venues, different productions, different, you know, operas. Operas are a bit harder because there is some prejudice against blind people performing in opera. There's a whole dispute of whether or not it can be done, but I can tell you I've done it more than once. It can be done. It's loads of fun. And I also do lots of oratorio music, church music. So I perform everywhere as well as, you know, performed a few times in Europe and the United States.
If you were counseling or chatting with a blind person who wanted to follow in your footsteps and they wanted to perform in the opera, what might you say to them in terms of getting around some of those barriers and presumptions?
First of all, I would say, and seriously, if this isn't in your blood, if you don't have to do this, then find something else to do because it is so frustrating and, you know, you have to really love it. You don't, you know, if you come to it with an attitude of, well, I'll just try this, it's not that important to me, then it's not worth the effort. But if it's in your blood and you have to do it like it is with me, and I understand that if somebody tells me I have to sing, then I would say try as much as you can. If you love opera, then fight it, then agree to play small roles at the beginning. But don't put too much hope, unfortunately, don't put too much hope in just an operatic career. You know, learn how to sing different styles of music, learn how to do art songs, learn how to do church music. Because unfortunately, I'm trying to pave the way for myself and other singers, and I have in some instances succeeded, but it's not easy. And I would say just persevere. Show them that you can do it. You have to work five times as hard as your sighted colleagues, and you might still not get the part, and you have to be prepared for it. But don't give up, because if it's in your blood, then people will eventually see that you're talented and you can do just as much and even more as your sighted colleagues.
It sounds to me like you're someone for whom opera is not only in her blood, but who has probably been singing since the time she could open her mouth with that attitude of work ethic. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate the difficulty that you face, and yet you do it, you continue to do it, because you have to continue to do it.
Yeah, that's right. I always say that I didn't choose music. Music chose me, and it's like something pushing me along. And yes, sometimes I have, you know, breakdowns, and I for a few months. I say, I just don't want to do this, and I can't fight this anymore. And then somehow something pushes me back up, pushes me back to my feet and tells me, you're doing this because you're not, you don't got a choice. So I'm doing it. But there are harder times, there are easier times. But I'll tell you, when I finally do something, when I finally get to play a role, when I finally give it my all, it's worth every single minute of frustration and tears and effort. So just, if you have to do it, do it.
Yeah, I can hear that in your voice. I can hear and feel that emotion in your voice. Now, did you grow up in Israel?
Okay. yes and no. I was born in Argentina, and I lived in Argentina for 2 years, and then I lived in the United States till I was five. Then when I was five, I came here to Israel, lived here till I was 13, went back to the States till I was 19, came back here, and then last year moved to Australia for a few months. So I've been, you know, I grew up in quite a few places, and if people ask me where I'm from exactly, it's really hard for me to answer. So, yeah, I spent many years of my life here in Israel, but also in other places.
Let me turn to Jeff here for a bit. I like to try to take time to feature each guest a little bit before we get to the main topic and open the lines. Now, Jeff, I've known you, obviously, for quite some time, and so I probably know a little bit more about you than I knew about Nama. But tell our listeners a bit about you and what brought you to ACB Radio.
Okay, well, that's an interesting thing. Well, I'm from Australia, which some of you may be able to tell from my accent. We've both got these slight coughs, and of course, it's when you go on radio that they decide to rear their ugly heads, and we're sitting here, you know, while you were doing your introductions, they're both coughing and spluttering away, going, gee, I hope they can't all hear that.
that's okay, I'm doing the same thing, so we're all just doing fine.
It's the magic of radio, isn't it? So I grew up in Sydney, Australia, which, for those of you who don't know, is the largest city in Australia. I don't know, like many other people, you know, did schooling and such, went off to university in a sort of smallish town, really. And studied contemporary music, which also led me to study things like audio engineering and broadcasting, because I have a radio station there. And radio is something that I've always enjoyed doing, even as I was growing up. My mother was involved in a community radio program, what you guys would call public radio, I guess, sort of non-profit radio program. About blindness affairs, blindness issues, is a weekly program that ran on a couple of stations in Sydney. And as I grew up, I assisted from time to time in bits of production for that, mostly on open reel tapes and things like that. And my dad was quite into tape recorders and microphones and all that sort of stuff, so I kind of grew up with it around me. And so when ACB Radio came along as an idea, or even some of its predecessors, streaming radio was something that I was into even before ACB Radio was around. Our blindness organisation in Australia had streamed a couple of its national conventions, and so the potential was quite clear to some of us at the time. And I wasn't at all surprised to see ACB Radio go on and broadcast ACB's convention, which, even though I'm not a member of the ACB, I think is a very valuable service that we provide. And, you know, and I'm willing to get up at at crazy times of the day and night to help provide that service.
Yes, and we are so glad that you're there. When something goes awry, the first thing Chrissy or I will do is say, call Jeff.
I have to say, having done a bit of live broadcasting in that situation myself, it is very nice knowing that there's someone sitting there at home, at their computer, whose sole job is to monitor what you're doing and rescue things when things go wrong.
Yes.
So when ACB Radio, particularly ACB Radio Interactive, began in September of 2000, which, for those of you who know the history, you'll know that ACB Radio Interactive started about 9 months after ACB Radio originally began, what eventually turned into ACB Radio Mainstream began. and so I got on board with that, and I'll tell you what, things were very different then. We were using modems to broadcast with,
yeah.
And all sorts of crazy things. I was thinking about that the other day. I thought my things have changed a lot since then. And so, because I was doing stuff on regular radio at the time, it really wasn't much of a jump to be doing it on the internet. And I thought, this is pretty cool. I can broadcast from home. I don't have to decide which CDs to take with me. I can just pull out whatever I want to play, which actually is a bit of a trap, really, because it means that you don't always think about what you want to play ahead of time, and then you suddenly go, gee, what am I going to play next? Anyway, and then I moved, in 2001, I moved to Brisbane, which is probably the third largest city in Australia, and I lived there up until April of this year, and my involvement with ACB Radio grew, particularly when Dave Williams became the managing director of ACB Radio in the middle of 2003. He was not as familiar with the server technology that we use here on ACB Radio as I was, and so he was quite willing to tap into my expertise to help him with some of that, and I quite enjoyed doing that as a volunteer. And eventually, that turned into a job, and I'll get onto that in just a moment. Probably my highlight, actually, I would say it's probably my highlight of my time with ACB Radio to date, was I actually had the opportunity to meet Dave in December of 2004 when he and I organised at very short notice to go and stream the 6th General Assembly of the World Blind Union,
yes.
Which mentioned the 7th General Assembly in his speech, and I honestly hope that someone will be going over to Geneva to stream that one, because it really is quite an impressive event. And I'd heard about these events, but I'd never actually gone to one. So to go and do that, and to also meet Dave, who I had been friends with for several years through ACB Radio Project, and to work with him on a project like that was really quite an experience, and it's one I won't forget in a hurry. It's not often you get put up in the Sheraton Hotel for a week and a half. As things progressed, Dave moved on from ACB Radio, and he recommended that some of the duties of the director be split because of the amount of work that's involved and also the different skills required. And anyway, basically, it turned out then that I became an employee of ACB to do, for money, a lot of the technical things that I had been doing on a volunteer basis, which I think was good for everyone, because a bit of money for me also, of course, but it meant also that ACB had someone whose job it was to look after things, which meant that I could prioritise being around and being contactable and all that sort of thing. So I hope it's something that's benefited everyone. Certainly, I feel it's benefited me in several ways. And I'm still doing that job. That was one of the nice things when I moved from Australia to Israel. It was a very comforting thought, knowing that I could take my job with me. And within a couple of days of touching down in Israel, we had a broadband internet, and we were online, and I was back to work
Well, it was a very comforting thought to me when you moved to Israel, knowing that I could more easily do the math to figure out the time zone, because I could never remember, no, wait, is he 19 hours ahead of me, or 20, or 18? Now I finally at least got it straight.
Yes, but of course, the thing is that actually, in terms of closeness to time, we're actually further apart.
I know.
Australia. I mean, if you think about it, the short way around, I was either, 5 or 6 or 7 hours behind you, and now we're 10 in front. So
yeah,
we are a little further away.
It's very silly. How did
the world?
Indeed. And now either one of you can respond to this question, or both of you, since it involves both of you. How did you guys meet?
Well, first of all,
it's actually very much thanks to ACB Radio.
I was actually going to say that I have to thank ACB Radio, which changed my life in many ways, and the most significant way is it got me married.
You guys should have gotten married on my show. Darn it, where were we? We weren't even thinking.
That would have been something.
Wouldn't that have been something?
It would have been a technical challenge. I did briefly consider it, but there was no way we were going to be able to pull
it
off.
Did you consider it?
I thought it would be nice to be able to stream it so that people could, who couldn't get there. Quite a few people couldn't.
Yeah,
but,
I think
you what ACB Radio can do to you.
That's right.
At home.
So I assume, Nama, that you were listening to Jeff's program on ACB Radio, and you liked what you heard.
No,
and,
actually.
No, see what
no,
assuming
it was, it's
does.
A more, it's a bit. A bit more complicated, and I don't know, less or more romantic, but no, the thing is that there was a thought of starting a station kind of like ACB Radio here in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know here about ACB Radio at all. I was approached in the beginning of 2005 by a few people whose idea it was to stream on the internet and do something like this. And because of my English, I was asked to research this. I was asked to research whether or not there is something like this already in existence. And if there is, whether or not we could, get some advice or what. So I looked on the net and actually found ACB Radio, and I wrote to the support address, and it went to Dave Williams, and he was very much willing to help. He was so enthusiastic. I mean, within minutes of, my writing the email, I already had one of those long responses, detailed, and yes, let's talk, and let's join up, and this is a project that can very much interest us, and I'm even willing to come to Israel, to pay for a ticket and come to Israel and help you guys. He was just really into it, and we spoke on the phone, and I was really happy to report back to the people who approached me and to say, hey, this can happen. And then I started asking a few technical questions, and Dave said, okay, I can answer some of those questions. But there is someone who can answer them better, and then he told me about Jeff, and we organized to do a Skype conference.
Now, I might pick it up at this point.
Okay.
Now, my entry into this was, I had heard about this person, Nama, from Dave, and he was quite enthusiastic about her and possibly going to visit her at some stage, which I might add he still hasn't done yet. We're trying to see how we can rectify that, but anyway, this was in by the time Dave was mentioning her to me, it was May 2005, and I still don't know what it was. I'm not a get up early in the morning type of person by nature, but on this particular morning, it was on Sunday morning, the 23rd.
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, 23rd of May.
22nd where I was.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning, the 23rd of May, 2005, where I was, at something like 6:30 in the morning, a Sunday morning at 6:30 in the morning. Who'd have thought it? Anyway,
thought it.
I got up I got up and logged on to Messenger, and I saw Dave, and Dave was posting that he was listening to the Eurovision Song Contest. Now, those of you who don't know what the Eurovision Song Contest is, it's a bit of an institution in this part of the world. In fact, that very year they celebrated 50 years of the Eurovision Song Contest. But basically, the idea is that all the people in the European region of the International Telecommunications Union, which this particular region, it does stray a little into the former Soviet countries as well. They basically get together, they're all invited to submit a song, which is usually very much sort of pop-oriented in nature and in some ways often rather tragic, but anyway, it's a bit of a laugh.
It used to be a lot better in the 80s and 70s, but anyway.
Anyway, and basically all the other countries get to vote on the songs. You can't vote for your own country, so it gets rather interesting, and whoever gets the most votes wins, and then they get to host the circus next year. Anyway, so Dave was watching this, and I'd heard of it, and we were talking about it. Anyway, he put up a stream so that I could listen to the end of this, basically listen to what he was listening to. And we were sort of, joking around and having a bit of a laugh at the whole thing, because, that's what you do. It's the kind of thing that no one admits to watching, but everyone does. And we were kind of chatting along, and Dave saw that Nama was on Messenger, and also another friend of his, and he got us all into like a Messenger text conference, I guess you would call it,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we actually first communicated, and that chat went for, I don't know, some 5 or 6 hours or something. I still have the log of it somewhere.
I love that.
That's when we organized the Skype, because this is, after Dave had told me about Jeff, and he said to me, here's the person I was talking about, up early in Australia, so let's, join up. And then we organized the Skype conference, and we talked for the first time on Skype and then on the phone, and it just went from there. We started talking, from once every couple of days to once every couple of hours to once every couple of minutes.
And talking for hours on end,
We set up like a kind of like Skype, but a lot, something called Open Phone, which takes a lot less bandwidth and you can do other things when you're talking. And we would just leave it, for 6, 7, 10 hours and talk and share stuff. And then eventually a few months later, Jeff came to visit me in Israel, and it was heading in that direction. It was just kind of like an instant click. I had no idea at the time in May 2005 that I'd be here at this time, in this situation, but it became pretty clear that it was going to something like this within weeks.
Yeah, I came to visit Nama for a month in October of 2005, and part of me was a little apprehensive to commit to booking for such a long period. But the rational part of my brain said, basically, we get on extremely well. I really, even if it is a bit of a disaster, I don't expect it being turning out so bad that I felt, that I couldn't stick it out for the rest of the month. And, of course, I did have a little bit of trepidation going to this part of the world, but it was clear to me that Nama wasn't living in daily fear. And I thought, well, if she isn't, then I'm not going to either. So I came over in October into November, early November, and I had a wonderful time.
It wasn't a disaster.
No, it went extremely well.
I guess it must have.
And I was able to see Nama give a recital, which I thought was a great thing to do. And in fact, I actually recorded it from the audience. So we had some material there to work with if we needed it, and we in fact did use it as demo material to send to some people. Since then, so it was a worthwhile venture. And we also did a 3-day trip to Jerusalem and visited some of these places that everybody hears about, like the Western Wall and the the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and stuff. And that was an amazing thing to do. And I also went to the Holocaust Museum there, which is an amazing place to visit. If anyone's ever in Jerusalem, ever in this country, you must go and see it. It's a very amazing thing, and it's very hands-on. It's not everything in glass cases. It's really amazing thing. And so I went back to Australia, and we're thinking, wow, this is going well. And we decided that before we decided we would make any decisions about who would move where, that Nama should visit Australia as well, so that each of us got to experience each other's country. So in late March 2006, Nama came out to visit me, and she was originally going to stay for 4 weeks, and she ended up staying for 6 weeks. And at that time, after a big, long think about it, we decided that Nama would move to Australia, and we would try and establish ourselves there, because, of course, Nama had obviously no issues with the English language.
Sure.
The Australian language.
well, then there is that.
She figured she could adapt to the Australian language, and it was certainly clear to me by then, well and truly clear to me by then, that she was able to understand the Australian sense of humour.
Yeah.
And that is something that I'm immensely proud of, because if she hadn't, then I think we might have been in trouble. Anyway, so Nama arrived in Australia. She left Australia on the 7th of May and came back on the 7th of July, which is an amazingly quick turnaround.
And all because I had to do one opera production and pack up one house.
Oh, my goodness.
The opera production fell through, didn't it?
No, I ended up doing it.
Oh, you did do it?
Yes.
I can you remember? I always keep
Yeah, the director left, but the production
was still. Oh, it still happened. Okay. I can never remember how that worked out. It's all a bit of a blur.
Yeah, well,
anyway.
For me,
So your Nam moved to Australia, and then 3 weeks after that, we moved out of where I was living at the time into our own place, which was a great thing to do. In hindsight, it wasn't the best place to be, but I was really glad that we were able to move in together. I thought that was quite an achievement, given that we'd only known each other for less than a year and a half, in fact, 14 months. And then we went through the laborious and often stressful process of trying to get Nama residency in Australia. And to put this into context, and I won't thump on about Australian politics for too long because it'll just bore everybody, but at that time, we're talking mid-2006, we'd had Conservative government for a little over 10 years. I'm extremely pleased to announce that as of about 5 weeks ago, the Conservative government is no more, and I'm very happy about that.
Well, I'm hoping to be able to announce the same thing in a few months. Go ahead.
Yes, it's less than a year now, isn't it? About 10 months.
Yes.
Anyway, so...
nobody knows our views.
No, never.
And so, of course, as has happened in many other places, including probably your own country, foreigners have been used as political mileage and the blame of all ills and all that sort of thing.
And
so,
of course, disabled foreigners.
Oh, yeah, well, that as well. But it basically means that the immigration process is... And also, I mean, Australia is seen as the lucky country and stuff. And it is true that a lot of people want to be there, but they could make the process a lot more straightforward than it is. But anyway, basically the situation was that... Nama could only stay in the country up to 3 months at a time, and the immigration process was very complicated. We actually even had to lodge, we had to lodge her visa applications from offshore, so it meant that we took two trips to New Zealand in order to comply with her visa application, which was something they could afford to do, but we had to do it. And the situation was getting, there were also other personal issues that I won't go into that were placing some stress on what we were doing, but basically...
And also because Brisbane wasn't really the best place for me career-wise, if it were Sydney or Melbourne, I think it would have been a bit easier, but things just got to a point where I couldn't stay. Personally, I felt very depressed and I needed to go back.
Yeah, I could see that this was having a lot of toll on Nama personally. And we did have some, obviously, many happy moments. We were able to get my mum up for Christmas, New Year, which was for 2 weeks, which was a good time. We all enjoyed that, and it was good to be able to spend some time and allow Mum and Nama to get to know each other.
Yes, a 90-degree Christmas day.
Wow!
something like that. And I could see that this was dragging Nama down. I was saying to her fairly regularly, I said, if you If you decide this is all too hard, then we'll do something else. We'll go to Israel or something like that. Because I knew that I didn't want her to have to take that on decision on her own. And it got to the point where in early February she said to me one night, I said, I can't take this anymore. I have to go home. And actually what kind of brought this conversation on was that she'd gotten yet another phone call from someone wanting to book her or to talk to her or something or other to do with her career in Israel. She was still getting phone calls about it. In fact, ironically, she's been getting more calls about it there than she has been here, but we'll start banging the drum in the new year about that. So I said, okay, let's take you home. So that was in early February. Within a week, we had planned that we would get married in mid-March and that we would leave the country on the day that her visa would expire in April. And so we basically had 10 weeks to get everything organized and to get out. And so on the 17th of March in Sydney, which is where most of my family are, we had a small registry service, which was quite nice. Unfortunately, because we were heading back to Israel, people didn't. And of course, it was organized at very short notice as well. And
yeah, we were planning to get married in June, and we just, within 3.5-4 weeks, we organized the wedding. It was pretty incredible.
That is pretty incredible.
And it still pains me that none of Nathan's family were able to come. But they weren't, and fortunately, one friend of hers did actually make the trip from the States, arrived about 4 hours before the wedding. I'm still impressed that she did that.
She really did. And they did give us a very nice reception when we came here, but, you know, your wedding day is your wedding day.
Yeah,
There was a bit of mixed emotion there, but...
And we didn't, of course, get a chance to have a honeymoon or anything. We came straight back to packing up to going away to Israel, and unfortunately offloading a lot of things that we'd acquired in the last, you know, 7 or 8 months, because we just really couldn't take it with us.
Sure.
Anyone that's ever done an international move, you know that you take anything with personal value or anything small that might be useful, and you get rid of the rest because it costs more to ship it often than it would to buy a new one on the other side.
Sure.
So apart from our bed, which we managed to bring with us, there was nothing of any, you know, substantial size that came with us.
Except for us.
Except for you guys. Well, and so now you're in Israel, and talk to me about being there. To me, quite frankly, Jeff, you did address this, but I would be very frightened because of what I read and because of what I think I know of Israel. I have always admired Israeli folks, because I feel that Israel has had literally to fight for everything. And they've scrapped and fought, and yet
we still do.
You still do. They've given land away and still scrapped and fought. But I have to say that I think I would be frightened about living there.
Before I talk about what it's like to live here, I think back to how ignorant I was about Israel when I first started to talk to Naama. So I thought I might just spend a quick moment explaining a few things about Israel, particularly about where it is, because I think that's important. Israel is on the cusp of three continents. It's just north of Africa, it's on the western tip of Asia, and of course it's just, you know, literally, you know, minutes flight from Eastern Europe. To the west of Israel is the Mediterranean Sea. To the north of Israel, on the western part, you have Lebanon, and on the eastern part, you have Syria. Directly to Israel's east, we have Jordan, and that's interesting in particular because on the other side of Jordan, you have Iraq. So it's really not far away at
all.
But
it's not that close either.
No, but compared to where I came from, I was suddenly a lot closer to, you know,
right.
one of the focal points of the world media than I had.
Yeah, yeah.
And to the south of Israel is Egypt.
Egypt and the Red Sea.
And the Red Sea. So, and also coming from two major differences from Australia I come from. Australia is quite a large country. Like, it's one of the largest countries in the world, and it's surrounded by lots and lots of water.
There's no land borders with any other country.
There's no land borders with anybody. All of these borders that I've mentioned, you know, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, they're all land borders.
Sure.
You know, you can flip on the radio, on the AM dial, and you can hear Arabic broadcasts from all of these countries and more. I even picked up a radio station in Iraq that's, you know, broadcasts Arabic most of the time, but in the middle of the night between, say, 1 and 4 a.m., it relays the voice of America. So it's really a different world entirely. And Israel is a very small country. It's got a population of something like 6-point-something million people.
It's about the size of New Jersey.
So it's very small.
Yeah.
People living in my own country, I understand that Israel can fit more than twice into Tasmania, which is, I find, an amazing statistic. But, you know, it only takes something like 6 or 7 hours or something, or is it even less, to drive from the top of the country to the bottom. It's really,
sure,
really small.
Sure.
And so in that space, you've got 6 million people. You've got two major cities, Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, which are only about 45 minutes drive apart, and a number of other noteworthy cities in terms of infrastructure and size. It's amazing. In Australia, we're used to having these big rural areas. In Israel, kind of rural areas are kind of in between all the urban areas.
Yeah.
So, and, of course, it's full of all places that we've heard of, you know, Jerusalem, obviously, but, you know, you've got places like, Nazareth and Galilee and other places that the particularly Christians will have heard of, and
Bethlehem,
of course, which is actually now in the Palestinian territories was it Samaria?
Judea.
Judea, sorry.
Yeah.
So that's where it is geographically. It's extremely close. When we went to the World Blind Union, it only took us about 45 minutes to fly to Turkey, and Lebanon was in between. It takes less than half an hour to fly to Cyprus. It takes presumably less than an hour to fly to Cairo and Jordan, of course.
Oh, Cairo is a lot less than an hour. It takes less than an hour to fly to Greece.
So it's really close. And the impact of, you know, the significance of this really didn't strike me until we were sitting having breakfast in Jerusalem on the last day of our 3-day trip that I mentioned earlier. And Nama turns to me and says, "You realize that the border with Jordan is about 2 kilometers from here." And I went, wow.
But
no wonder everyone's so tense over here, all living in each other's pockets.
Yeah.
Right. But let me address the question that you asked, because I think this is what people really are concerned about. And look, I'll be completely honest with you. I can't say that Israel is the calmest, serene, quiet, Switzerland-like place. It isn't. But also, it's not a scary place to live, and especially not in the center of the country.
Which is where we are.
Where things get a little hairy is near the territories. If you don't go where you're not supposed to go, and there's specific instructions where not to go, then you're pretty much out of harm's way. But with that said, I will say that there are always alerts, always threats, always in the back of the mind. There's the terrorist attacks from the mid-90s, you know, buses,
sure,
going off,
sure,
in Jerusalem and stuff. But that, Fortunately, thanks to our IDF and thanks to our intelligence services, that hasn't happened in quite a while. And I have to say that people lead more or less normal lives. I mean, we're always on the alert, but there really is not a sense of fear. Even our tourism is going back up to, you know, almost where it was, not quite, but really. Israel is quite safe. Security is tight, yet you don't see soldiers with guns in the street. You don't hear shooting in the street. You don't hear people running in a panic. It's very much a normal Western feeling place. And again, if you decide to venture into the occupied territory as well, you know, that's a bit different and that's not safe. But if you comply with the travel advisories from your own country, then you should be all right.
It's interesting you mentioned Israeli security. I had my first taste of Israeli security when I traveled to Israel the first time. I'm sure we're all fairly familiar with the American-style security, you know, particularly post the 11th of September.
They yes.
had, you know, people with machine guns in the airports and all that sort of thing, and it was all fairly intimidating. In Israel, and I was singled out for special treatment because I was a non-Israeli traveling on a non-Israeli passport to Israel for the first time. I was singled out for special treatment. I was worried that I wouldn't actually get my flight from Hong Kong to Israel, and in fact, my luggage didn't. They asked me a whole stack of questions. Who was I? What did I do? Why was I going to Israel? Who was this Nahama? Who bought the ticket? It wasn't done in an intimidating way at all. In fact, they're really quite nice about it, but they're efficient. They just get in and do the job. You know, I went through the thing and my shoes went off, as they often do because of the way they're constructed. They took my shoes and my belt to go and have them scanned. Sitting there, could hear my plane out there going, you know, I was literally, you know, a few meters away from my plane. I'm sitting there without my shoes on my belt going, I'm actually going to get on this flight. But I did, fortunately. And I'm not the only one that gets singled out for this. There was a group of us, you know, three or four parties who were traveling on non-Israeli passports, and we were put through, security. And there were security processes when I got to Israel as well. It took me longer to get through than I might always, but they just get in and do the job. In Australia, they had, as post-September 11 stuff, they had, you know, terrorism awareness campaigns, and it was seen as fairly much of a joke by the people who were, you know, cynical about things. But the slogan for that was, you know, be alert, not alarmed. And really, here, that is how people live. People are alert, they're aware of things. If you hear a bang that you don't expect, you know, people, you know, think, oh, what's that? But there isn't kind of mass panic. I mean, you've got basic safety procedures. You have a room in your house or on, you know, in your apartment building that's a safe room, like that's sealed up, and you can get in there for, you know, to have protection from
gas
attacks.
They're mostly used for storing bicycles and
yes, people don't often use them.
Normal. You get people check your purse at a shopping mall, but that's about it. And I think the media does, diplomatically saying, does some injustice to Israel.
Well, the thing you have to remember, I'm realizing this now that I'm hearing reports about Australia, is that particularly when you're out of the country, they'll only talk about your country when there's something to say. So, the reason why you hear a lot of bad news coming out of Israel is because good news is no news. They don't talk about the stuff going on here, and you don't hear the context of things. And you also don't hear some things that you should be hearing. For example, you know, you might hear that the Israeli Defense Forces did a raid into Gaza Strip, and, you know, five Islamic Jihad members got killed. But you don't hear that in the last 2 weeks, 25 Qassam rockets were shot from Gaza to, you know, surrounding Israeli towns, which is something that happens on a nearly daily basis.
That's right.
Those things just don't make the news because they're not newsworthy anymore.
Let me just interrupt for a second here to let our listeners know that we have just opened the lines. I actually got so fascinated with what you were telling me that I forgot I'm doing a show. So
we're just talking on the phone.
Yeah, it's just like we're just chatting on the phone here. Let me let folks know that the lines are open. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926, and we will be right back with Jeff Shang and Nama Aris.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM.
All righty, and we actually do have a call, so let's bring the caller on in. Hi there, you're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena, Joe from Boston. Haven't talked to you and listened for a while, having health problems myself.
Oh, well, we're glad you're here, Joe.
We got to get you on the Boston station, WRKO, but they don't do shows on with blind people.
Oh, dear.
We have to straighten them out someday.
And
several things I want to ask. What about the prison system in Israel? I've heard it's bad or good or better than the American system. I'd like to make a comment. I'd like your feedback because you're from Australia and you're from Israel. She's from Israel and he's from Australia, right?
Right.
Okay. What is your view on politics? And I don't mean this in any degradation way. You know, I think that we should really, and I'm not saying it to be mean, I think if we have kept out of the Middle East, if we didn't get involved, because, you know, we're involved with bad and good. America now is, the dollar is going down, and we have more homeless and more people out of jobs. We seem to give everything away, and for some reason, a lot of the people over in these third world countries don't like it. And I like your take on both of my questions.
All right, so just to recap, because I'm going to let you hang up so that they can answer, your questions are, what are the prison systems like?
Yeah, how do they treat people? I saw a program on prison, and they're basically pretty good. And what is your view on the politics? Do you agree that if America had stayed out of some of the politics, we wouldn't have some of the problems that we do over in this country? I mean, we can help, but
okay.
You know what I mean? Only for a while.
I got it. All right, Joe. Thanks a lot. Bye bye. Okay. All right. Who wants to tackle that?
We get easy questions to begin with.
Okay. First of all, thanks, Joe. Thanks, Joe. I'm glad you're listening. And it's probably cold in Boston. First of all, Israel is not considered a third world country. Let's just make that very clear. It's a developed, westernized country. Even though it's in the middle of all these third world countries, we're just a bit different because we have a bit more resources, and we were helped by the United States, I will admit to that. Do I think the United States should have gotten involved in, you know, places like, you know, Iraq and stuff like that? Absolutely not, but... It's not actually an easy question to answer. I think that caused a lot of problems. I think we were used as kind of like, especially in the first Gulf War, we were used a bit as kind of like, oh, how would I even put it?
By both sides.
The word pawn comes to my mind.
Yes,
definitely. Look, you had this ridiculousness of, you know, Israel, who didn't even have troops, you know, in Kuwait.
No.
They were shooting, you know, Scud missiles into Jerusalem and Tel Aviv.
Into Tel Aviv, into people's houses. Fortunately, with all that said, there's only one person who was killed during that Scud attack, those Scud attacks in 91, and that was very fortunate. It's not fortunate, of course, for that particular person and for their family, but it could have been a lot worse.
No, haven't you?
And I think America has made the same mistake again. Now, the repercussions here are a bit less, although in the beginning, in 2003, it was feared that we might have a second go-around of this. But obviously, by then, Iraq had fewer resources to do what they did in 91, and they didn't send any missiles or rockets towards us.
I'm moving you onward because we have another caller on hold. What about your prison systems? Yeah.
First of all, I haven't been to prison yet, so I can't tell you from the inside. But compared to other prisons in the Middle East, again, it's developed. The prisoners have good conditions. There's no, you always get on the news everywhere in the world, a prisoner has been mistreated here, has been treated there. But it's not a terrible prison system as it is in some other countries. Mm-hmm. Obviously prison is not a nice place to be, but I understand that they have quite good conditions.
The interesting thing, just quickly to touch on just before we go, is that some people may be interested to know that the court system here is more the European style of inquisitorial.
Oh, yes, there's no jury.
They have like a panel of judges and they inquire into the issue rather than having, the British system of having a jury. Don't get me started on the American justice system because I could probably go on all day about it and it wouldn't be very complimentary.
Okay.
The fact that I haven't been hearing about the prison system in Israel probably means that it's probably all right.
Each system has its flaws and its advantages, and I don't think we're any worse than any other country.
All right, let's bring our next caller in. Thank you for holding. You're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena, it's Mitch Pomerantz.
Mitch Pomerantz, good evening. How are you?
Oh, good evening.
Hello.
Jeff, I had to call because we hadn't met in person or over the phone or internet, and I figured I'd take the opportunity to say hi.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I heard you talking about going to Geneva, and I know there's still a lot of talking to be done in terms of if and how ACB Radio will cover that, but if they decide to send me in, I'm a lot closer to Geneva than I was to Cape Town 4 years ago, so it may happen. Then if that does happen, I look forward to meeting you in person.
Well, I know Chrissy and I have chatted. We will definitely have Chrissy there, and Chrissy has already said to me we really need to have two people in Geneva. And I said, I hear you, and we will do what we can. And, who that's going to be at this point, I don't know. But I did have a question for you, Jeff. I've only met a couple of folks from Israel and no one for quite a long time. And I'm interested, and Nama, I don't know, I didn't catch the first 15 minutes of the show, so I don't know if you're native-born to Israel. You sound like anybody you might meet walking down the streets of New York City or an eastern or even a midwestern city in the U.S. But my question.
Well, I am Israeli.
Okay.
I've lived here for. I wasn't born here, but I am Israeli. Yes.
Well, my question really has to do with how blind and visually impaired children are educated. I know there are, a lot of education is taken from Western Europe and from the U.S., I suppose, to some extent, but I'm curious about how blind and visually impaired children are educated. Are they mainstreamed? Are they,
this I know absolutely nothing about.
I can answer that. That's a very good question, actually. I know some people would not agree with me about this, but I am a great believer in integrating blind and visually impaired children with other children. I am not a believer in, some people, yes, do need special education and do need special support, but I don't think it's a very good idea to set up schools that are specifically for blind people. That's how I was educated. There are some schools for blind people, but what happens in those schools is that they tend to be kind of like a multi-disability, for multi-disability people. People have some intellectual difficulties or mobility difficulties, and just blind people, if they are of, you know, pretty average intelligence and above, are educated mostly in the regular system. And I know that has benefited me a great deal socially and in other ways, too, because I think that that blind people should be exposed. It's very natural that blind people would kind of get together and feel more comfortable with other blind people. It happens to me, too. I completely say that and admit to that. But it's very important that from an early age, blind people are exposed to sighted people. And it's not less important that sighted children would be exposed to blind children or to children with a disability, because it educates both sides and it benefits both sides.
Well,
I think
Israel benefits from the I think also Israel benefits from the advantage of being a relatively small country. It means that it's probably easier to because it's a relatively small country, but you can bring like it's what you would call federal resources to bear on things like the education system, whereas in somewhere like the States or Australia, education tends to be a state thing. There's no states in Israel. It's too small. So it's probably easier in terms of allocating resources that it's a smaller country.
I was going to say to Nama, we've had much the same debates in the U.S., mainstreaming, which is the system you're essentially talking about, versus sending kids to special schools. And it's a debate that, you know, there are no winners and no losers. The problem here
Absolutely.
In this country is that the kids who have been mainstreamed have had a real, some of them have had a very good education in techniques of blindness and learning Braille, and others have not. And so the proponents of sending blind children to special schools, they're typically the ones who say, well, but these kids aren't getting the education and the blindness skills and learning Braille. And, you know, we believe that that if you don't know Braille, you're going to have a real tough time making it in even inside a society. So it sounds like the argument is pretty much the same there as it is here.
I agree, but I will say that I was, like I said, mainstreamed, as you say, and I have learned Braille in first grade. They sent, you know, a special Braille teacher to me, to my school, and I have learned Braille exactly when I learned, you know, regular print. So if you have the right resources, you know, I was lucky enough to have, like, maybe because of what Jeff said, that it's a small country and it's
right.
a bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I always had what I needed, even in a regular school. So I have kind of benefited from both worlds.
And
you have an interesting situation where things like mobility and training and such are provided by the city, which I think is an interesting thing here in terms of the financing of it, which I think is an interesting idea.
And that I think really is the key issue is. In the States now, there is a lack of the underlying support in most school districts.
Absolutely.
That a child needs. And I am a mainstreamed kid. I mean, for years and years and years of my life, I would never go to, oh, why would I want to go to school for the blind? And in the middle of my junior year, I suddenly felt that I was an island and I didn't know very many blind people, and much to my parents' frustration, I opted to go to the school for the blind for the last year and a half of my education. I actually am glad that I did it. I wouldn't trade for 1 minute the time I spent in public school, nor would I trade the time I spent at the school for the blind. And I was very fortunate to have, I mean, I was trained with a white cane by the time I was 8. I was reading Braille by the time I was 6. I was typing on a typewriter when I was 7. So mm-hmm. I had that support, but unfortunately, that's not what we're seeing coming out of our schools today in the U.S. And I'm wondering if perhaps the question here might be, Is Israel still able to provide the support today to its blind students that you obviously received?
Well, again, I was lucky enough to get the support of other blind children, kind of like peer support. I went to some afternoon classes with other blind children from other schools. I was living in Jerusalem at the time, and I was lucky enough to also meet other blind children my age, so I did have the best of both worlds
mm-hmm.
there. Again, what happens here, unfortunately, is that there are schools for the blind, but again, the level of education there is lower because people feel, or I don't know who feels, that they can put blind people in with people who have, you know, intellectual disabilities. And that obviously brings the level down. I know maybe that doesn't sound so good, but it's true. And look, no system is perfect, like we said, you know, like all of
Marlena?
Us said here.
Yeah.
One final comment, and you know, it's certainly no secret to you, a number of people in ACB are aware, but I'm Jewish, and my mother had friends who emigrated to Israel, and folks who have come over and visited from Israel. And my understanding, and it certainly in this day and age in the United States, it's a sad commentary, but our education system in this country for all students is pretty poor, and everything I've heard about the Israeli school system is that it's quite outstanding.
Well, maybe we should send our kids to Israel. Hey, Mitch,
it depends on the city. It depends on where you are, but it's quite good.
Yeah.
Since you missed the beginning of the show, Mitch, let me just let you know that your New Year's message was played at the beginning.
Oh, good.
Of the show. So that's how we started out.
I wasn't sure it was going to get to Chrissy on time. We had a lot of fun trying to dig out. We had to buy a new microphone because the old one didn't work, and we just had all kinds of fun and games.
Wow.
But I'm glad it got on. And I'm looking forward to the WBU conference in August. Jeff, I hope we get a chance to meet there, and Nama too. If not there, then at an ACB convention. So thank you for the work you do for ACB, and certainly the work you do too, Marlena.
Well, thank you, and I will see you. I'll talk to you next week.
We'll be talking on Wednesday evening.
Wednesday evening it is.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Yep. Bye bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
866-666-7926 is the phone number to call, and it's about 13 minutes past the hour. Are you guys still good to go, or do you want to go back to bed?
We had about 3 or 4 hours sleepage before we came on the show, so we're all right. We sat down with cups of tea just before we went on the air, and I think we're all cooking with gas.
Yeah, we are.
Well,
Gary, you really help. You give us good energy, Marlena.
Well, Gary said. I think I woke him up. I said, well, it's 3 a.m.
No.
What do you expect? We have a call.
No, our alarms went off at 2:30. And
we were at the computer by the time Gary called.
You guys are
great.
So...
No problem.
You guys are very cool. We have another call. Let's bring him on in. Hi there. You're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello there, guys. This is Timothy.
Hi, Timothy. Can you speak up?
How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Not bad, thank you.
Good. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out what your guys' transportation is like.
The transportation system in Israel.
Oh,
good question. All right. Thanks, Timothy. But what is your transportation system?
Well, obviously there's cars aplenty here, and I have to say getting used to driving on the right-hand side of the road was something that took a little bit of getting used to, because in Australia we drive on the left-hand side.
You people are weird.
Okay. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But, within cities in Israel, the main form of public transport is is buses
and trains.
And particularly between towns, there's also quite a decent train network now too. They're both very good. There's lots of buses that go just about everywhere, I think. We don't live far from a stop. In fact, we live very close to it, and you often hear the buses going past. So you can get to a lot of places on those.
Yeah, I can compare it. When I lived in Miami, Florida, excuse me, it was very hard, next to impossible, to get around independently by public transportation. It was at best unreliable and at worst, you know, almost non-existent. Here you can do pretty much things on your own, depending, of course, on where you live and how big your town is, that, you know, that will affect the, you know, how often the buses come and go. But basically in the center area, you can get, like Jeff said, anywhere and everywhere by bus. They're safe, they're clean, they are on time, they are free for blind people, and so are the trains. In between cities, like from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, or, you know, bigger, longer distances on the bus are half price for the blind person and for whoever is with the blind person. And it's really very affordable. Bus is very affordable. And now I have to say something about the train system. Up until about 10, 15 years ago, the train system was pretty awful. The lines were put in by the British, who ruled Israel until 1948. The lines were old. It took forever to get, you know, places. They put in new lines. The train system is very efficient. It's amazing. It's, again, clean, and it's free for blind people. Anywhere you go on the train in Israel is free for blind people.
And,
so,
of course, you get to avoid all the traffic. The one exception to the abundance of transport is the Sabbath, which is, you know, Friday evening into around to Saturday afternoon, because the buses don't run then, the trains don't run then. There are some shuttle services that will take you to some places and you pay for them, and taxis cost a percentage more as well. So your ability to get around on the Sabbath is somewhat reduced, except in Haifa, the buses run on Sabbath.
That's right, and there is a lot of lobbying for that to be done in the rest of the country, because I think buses should run on the Sabbath. Not all of us are religious. In fact, most of us are not religious.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to what a lot of people may think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have, you know, the quiet and peaceful Sabbath and not to hear the buses, but it does inconvenience you a bit.
And they're not that disturbing, let's face it, really. I mean, people blaring car horns is much more disruptive than the sound of the buses going past.
Yeah. Well, we have another call. Let's bring them in. Hi there. You're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Oh, good afternoon. Good evening. This is Dave in Visalia, California.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Jeff. I've listening to this with great interest. I've had three guide dogs, and I got them all in one school down in Southern California, and there was a friendship between this school, International Guiding Eyes at the time it was called, now it's called Guide Dogs of America, and Israel, and a lot of their international residents came from Israel, including one, Jonathan Luncree, who was a trainer.
I know Jonathan.
Oh, you do? Oh, is he still training? Does he still have his dog school there?
Yes, there. In fact, up until, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people who wanted guide dogs had to go somewhere else to get them. Most of the people went to, is it Long Island? Somewhere in the States.
We had a good number come out to Los Angeles. And his desire was to start a school there, and I've always wondered whether he indeed succeeded in that.
I can tell you that there are two schools. I don't have a guide dog myself, so I can't tell you. I just know of him. I don't know him very well, but I do know of him. I have seen some of the dogs that he's trained. They're very good. Also, the dogs that the other school trains are very good. Unfortunately, there's a bit of a competition or a rivalry, you know, between the schools, which is a bit unfortunate, but I guess that's human nature.
Well, that was his goal, and I thought that he probably had
achieved it.
But that's interesting. And the whole thing is rather interesting. Of course, I always look forward to talking to 4X stations on the ham radio, but I've never actually talked to one from California yet other than on Echolink. One of these days.
Yeah.
So good to make you guys acquaintance and have fun there.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
866-666-7926. And speaking of Jonathan, boy, it's funny what a small world this is. I can't remember his wife's name, but if I'm recalling correctly, I received one dog from what was then International Guiding Eyes, and they thought they were doing me a great favor and giving me the dog that they had used as their show dog. Well, no one told me that this particular dog lived with Jonathan and his wife and was treated like a princess. And oh my goodness, she and I had 5 years of a battle of wills together as to whether or not we were going to go out and work today or whether or not we were going to go back in. If she didn't want to go back into the house, she'd just walk right by the house like, well, I've never seen that before.
Oh, dear.
But she was everyone's love at the school. And we have another caller, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena. This is your buddy Deb, who's sojourning in Southern Cal.
My buddy Deb, who's sojourning in Southern Cal. Okay.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good. I don't miss the snow. I don't. Absolutely not.
Well, don't
sunshine.
Don't rub it in. Just ask your question. See, I could talk to her like that because I know her.
When I was in college in the 70s, we had a speaker from Israel come, and he told me, back then we had a draft, and one of my pet peeves was that I thought that everybody, even people with disabilities, ought to serve their country in some manner. And he said that if I was in Israel, that I would be obligated to do that. Is that true?
Absolutely not.
No. So they don't draft.
We should explain a bit more about this, though. Now, my understanding is that in Israel, most people are expected to serve 3 years with the army.
Boys, 3 years. Girls, 2 years.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was 3 years for everyone.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. You learn something
every day.
Or every night at 4 o'clock in the morning. There are ways of getting out of it, but having a disability is one of them. But for people who don't have obvious things that count them out, getting out of a military service is not always viewed as a positive thing and can come and bite you later on if you try and do it. It doesn't mean that blind people or people with disabilities can't serve their country if they want to as a volunteer.
Up until the early 90s, the Army was reluctant to take blind people because they kind of didn't know what to do with them. But nowadays, lots of blind people are volunteering, whether it's in the intelligence capacity or the military radio station, which is the most interesting radio station, and in computers and other things. And actually, some of them go on to, after they finish their service, go on to actually get jobs as, like, we call it civilians, you know, who work for the Army.
Uh-huh.
And they treat them well too, you know. We know some people who do this kind of work, and like for example, we talked about the transport issues on the Sabbath. They'll take them to and from on the Sabbath, and they'll take them, they've got to work really early in the morning or late at night when public transport isn't available. They will transport them, and I think that's a very good thing.
So a lot of people do volunteer either for the Army or for something called social service, which is not the Army, but you do get 2 years basically
kind of
to do volunteer work for, you know, whether it's going to rural areas and helping kids out or working, you know, for and with the elderly or doing other things, but no, there's, you would not be drafted into the army.
As a blind person?
No, what happens is that everybody gets, at about 16, everybody gets a letter from the army, even blind people. And then you get what's called, you come for an interview, or you send, you know, if you're blind or disabled in any other way, you send your, it's called a blind card, which kind of like you get issued from the government. It has your picture, it has your ID number, and it basically states that you're blind. And then you get what's called, everybody gets, you know, blind-sighted, able-bodied people get what's called a profile. What a profile means is 97 is the highest you get. And a profile means is how physically fit and emotionally, how physically and emotionally fit you are to serve in the Army. So the lowest you can get is 21, and these are people who have very serious mental and emotional issues. And the highest you can get is 97, which basically is means that you can fight in, you know, combat. Automatically, blind people get what's called a 24, and that means that they cannot serve, or they're not obligated to serve for medical reasons. So, yes, you do have to go through a small procedure with the Army, but basically it's to get out of it.
Well, see, they won't even... They won't even give us any. I mean, they don't even want to see us.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah.
No. We're just automatically ruled out in anyone with a disability. I mean, I suppose you could go and volunteer, but I'm not sure that it would be. That there would be any benefit to you.
They wouldn't know what to do with you
yeah.
if you did.
Yeah.
No, and that's how it was here. And again, maybe because it's not an obligation to go to the Army,
right.
they don't bother.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, even when
see,
we
in some ways... Sorry.
I was just going to say, even when we had the draft, blind people were not obligated
yeah.
to, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, although I did read a couple of books about guys that got sent these notices by mistake and had to go and prove that they were blind because they thought they were trying to get out of, you know, going to Vietnam or whatever. But generally, they ignored us.
Well,
I'm gonna
let Jeff
yeah.
comment on this and let you go so that we can take some more calls.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going. Running.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Enjoy
okay.
the sun.
In some ways, what, Jeff?
In some ways, Israel has some reasonable attitudes to people with disabilities because of the nature of the wars and the amount of fighting that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are quite a lot of people who've been injured, you know, in combat, and because the population of Israel is relatively small, I would think a lot of people would know some kind of friend or relative who has some kind of disability, either through, you know, conventional means or through military service.
Yes, lots of people have been injured in combat. They tend to be in different circles than other people. They get obviously different benefits, which I think they deserve. They do pretty well as far as benefits, but again, you know, being injured in combat is obviously traumatic. I don't think anybody would want to trade places with
I think not. Do blind
yeah.
people in Israel in general receive any sort of public assistance financially?
Yes. We do get what's called a pension once
mm-hmm.
a month. I don't know how it compares to the United States, but I can tell you that it's not a whole lot of money. It's okay, but it's not something... If you had to only live on that, it would be a bit difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We do get something called rent assistance if you're renting and you don't own a property. If you do own a property, you are exempt from most taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another thing. You are exempt from income tax.
Really?
Unless you earn a huge amount
unless
of money.
Unless you earn so much money that is, you know, obscene, something like, you know, about
$200,000 something?
A bit more. Close to $200,000 a year, then you have to pay tax.
Now, if you are employed, does your pension change based on the money that you make?
Unfortunately, yes. Mm-hmm. If you get more than your pension, then your pension actually, if you are in a regular job for more than 6 months, and you kind of have a contract, or you have kind of an, you know, assurance that you do have the job, then your pension disappears, which I think is unfortunate and not right, but it does. You still get something called the mobility allowance, which is a smaller pension, which you get anyway. And actually, if you work or study, you get more than if you don't. It's a bit of a problem because some people, because of this, would rather stay home than go to work and get the pension, and that really frustrates me. And look, this system is not perfect, mm-hmm. but it is a problem, and it's a disincentive to find a job unless you find a very good paying job.
Well, you know, we have some of the very same issues here with our Social Security system. Here, the way the system has developed, if some people are afraid to go out and try to find work, and one reason is that if you make $1 over the amount, which changes each year, you're just dropped. It's like falling off the cliff. Mm-hmm. And there go your medical benefits as well.
Medical benefits stay. That stays, but.
Interesting. In Australia, it's a bit different, and it's not necessarily perfect either, but in Australia, the blind pension is completely means test. Free assets test free. So if you are earning $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 or $1 million a year, you still get your blind pension. And the other thing which I think is good, and I think that they could apply to these benefits that disappear, is there is a rent assistance component there, which you're only eligible if you earn below a certain amount. But if you earn more than this particular amount, it rolls off. So I think it's something like for every $2 over that amount, you lose $1 of assistance. Mm. So you still come out ahead, which I think is a good system. And I think is a good idea. I mean, if you've got a situation where you're working and you're having to pay extra costs associated with work and it's not paying much more than your pension, you may well find that overall you're actually doing worse off mm-hmm. than if you were not working, and like Nama said, that's a disincentive to work. And if it rolled off like that, it would be better. Surely they want to encourage people to be ahead.
Sure.
Because blind people who work and get decent wages obviously are happy not to have the pension, but I think they still should have some of it because we do have expenses that sighted people might not have, and. Well, I don't know if advocacy organizations can do anything about that, but the unfortunate thing is that I have to say, and I have to really, really commend and compliment organizations like ACB and BCA in Australia. I wish we learned from you guys because you do so much. I am so impressed, you know, by the conventions that I listen to and how much people do and how much people care and how involved people are willing to get. And I so wish that we had the same kind of involvement. It doesn't mean that there is no organization. Quite the contrary, there's too many of them,
mm-hmm.
small
mm-hmm.
ones, and they're busy fighting each other rather than helping the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very hard to get in there and change the attitude.
And the one that has the big profile is also the main service provider, which I know works in some countries but doesn't seem to work so well here. And so the one that really has the clout to do stuff really doesn't do a lot of it, and certainly it isn't, at least in practice, a democracy where people are involved in doing stuff. So it's a frustrating thing, and it was amazing to go to the European Blind Union and see all the stuff that people were doing there and thinking, God, man, why isn't Israel here?
And yeah, it was amazing for me to see it in Australia and amazing for me to hear the conventions of ACB because people get involved. People take a week out of their lives, and, you know, goodness knows how long they take to prepare and organize these conventions.
Months.
And how much money goes into them. And they do it. They do it. Why don't we do it?
Because it's so much smaller here, you could all get there. It would be so much easier.
That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say, my gosh.
I suspect maybe we'll be doing a bit of work in this area.
It frustrates me to no end, and
well,
I know that no organization is perfect and that people in their own organizations may get frustrated with them, but believe me, guys, it's a great thing you've got. Really great.
Speaking as a board member of ACB, I can assure you, Nama, that if you are ever really ready to try to dig in and get something started and figured out, we can provide you with some very knowledgeable folks with whom you
wonderful.
Can talk.
We will keep
and,
that in mind.
Yeah,
we will.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If it was up to me, believe me, if it was just up to me, it would be done tomorrow.
Yeah.
I find this, it's an odd position for me to be in for me because I don't want to be seen as being the outsider who comes in and tells everyone what they should be doing.
Sure.
And also, of course, I don't have the language skills to be able to talk to people in Hebrew. But the thing is that, you know, in Australia I was involved with Blind Citizens Australia and I did see what it could do and I was, you know, it's doing things without me now. But I kept one of my committee positions for several months while I was here in Israel because we had phone meetings. I could do it using VoIP and it was extremely cheap. And I said, look, I was elected for 12 months and I intend to sit out my term. And so I did that. And I felt that even over here I was able to contribute to decisions and make suggestions and things. And it frustrates me because people here in Israel, people talk about the Israeli mentality, and it is an interesting thing.
Oh, boy.
But when you get it focused in the right direction, you know, people constantly talk here about how Israel punches above its weight as a country of only 6 million people, and I think it does. And I think if that kind of energy, you know, you see the kind of energy that other countries in this area, the European area, are putting into blindness issues and things. And yeah, there are things here that need addressing, but there are also, you know, things here that have been achieved. And if you could focus that kind of energy and mentality into advocating for blind people as a unified, you know, grassroots movement, the possibilities are really quite amazing. I'm confident that, you know, if we can get everyone pulling in the right direction, we could have a really, really good situation here. It's just making it all happen that's going to be difficult.
That's the problem. They say where there are two Israelis, there's three opinions. So, it's like that. But I can tell you that it was comforting to know and to be, you know, from this point, to be in Australia. And if we had a question, like I had a problem with their phone, one of the phone companies, and Jeff had some questions about something else. It was really comforting to be able to pick up the phone, to call a number and say, hey, what are my rights here? What's the answer? And people there will help you. They might fight for you or help you fight your battle. And it doesn't happen here. You know, some sectors have, you know, do very well, like we mentioned the education sector and things like that. But so in daily battles, you're pretty much on your own.
What about the employment?
An advocacy organization, sorry?
I was going to ask about the employment rate among blind folks in Israel. It's pretty abysmal here.
It's pretty abysmal. I think it's the same ratio to the rest of the world. What is it, 75% unemployment?
Yeah.
That's kind of the figure that's kicked around.
Yeah, that's kind of it. And again, the disincentive, well, why should I lose my pension
mm-hmm.
if I'm only going to earn $100 more a month?
Mm-hmm.
Then why should I go out and work? And frankly, why should you?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, some people just need to work because that's how they are. And, I would prefer to work. But I do understand not wanting to work if you're going to lose your benefits. Again, fortunately, you won't lose your medical benefits because the system here is provide you with it.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, losing your benefits or whatever. But if you're going to work 3, 4, 5 days a week, you want to feel that you're going to get significant advantage overall out of it to make the effort worthwhile.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's, it's very interesting. It I'm sitting here trying to digest how a country that feels to me is composed of people who are such fighters, how the blind population seems to be quite so far behind in
its... Oh, no, they're fighters. They fight each other.
Yeah, look, pulling this together is going to be very difficult, and I hope that I'm not going to be the kind of visionary that tries and does it on his own. But I mean, you've got some little groups doing really good things. For example, there's one organisation that helps blind students, and I understand that for what they do, they do very well.
Also, the guide dog user, organization, does very well with advocacy, and
So part of the problem in trying to pull all these people together is that you've got to try and find a way to make it such that the people who are actually doing their things in their own spheres can be incorporated in it. And it's not going to be a huge organization like ACB where you can have massive affiliate, you know, organizations where you've got, you know, hundreds of people in your guide dogs chapter alone or whatever. But but I think there is room for that kind of a structure where special interest groups are given a position and their expertise is recognized for what it is. It's just a matter of trying to get it. I mean, Israel is an interesting place. It doesn't even have a constitution, which I find absolutely amazing.
Really?
As a person who comes from a country where there isn't one.
Neither does the United Kingdom.
That is true, but they've kind of got all these years of convention behind them.
We've got laws. It's not that we don't have laws. We have...
But you've got a situation where we have discussions about this, as you can tell. You have a situation where, you know, the electoral system can be changed and is changed, you know, every few elections. It's kind of, there are some aspects where it seems like they kind of make it up as they go along. And I find that a little scary, but it's certainly done transparently.
We're not even 60 years old.
That is true.
You have to remember this. The United States has over 200 years behind it. Australia has over 100 years. So, you know, we can be forgiven for making things up as we go along. But like you said, it's transparent. Laws have to be passed in a certain way. People don't just make things up and act on them. You have to have, you know, there's the judicial system. There's the parliament. There's all these, bodies which pass and enforce law. And... you know, it all has to be very much above board, so it's not a mess.
It's still
taking shape because we are young.
And
60 years for a country is pretty young.
And
it's pretty young, yeah.
Had other things to kind of worry about.
Yeah.
And everyone is really politically aware here. It's amazing. You get, you know, 80-90% voter turnout in elections.
Oh, yeah, 90%, 90-odd percent for an election is standard.
Is standard.
That's amazing. Yeah. And even in our country here, as much experience as we have being a country, we don't get that kind of voter turnout typically. We truly don't.
I wish you did.
Yeah, I wish you did too, because, you know, whether you like it or not, whoever is in control of the United States has a major influence on the rest of the world.
That's right.
I heard someone joke when they had all this stuff in Florida in 2000 that the whole world would get to vote on the U.S. presidency. Maybe they've got a point there. I don't know.
Yeah. We were kind of hoping something would happen to bring that to a close. It was crazy. And
I'm hoping for good things for 2008.
Oh, my motto is, it's going to be great in 2008, and one can take that "it" and define it however they chose, but I know what I mean.
And it'll be fine in 2009.
Yeah, it'll be finer when we hit the niner. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. It's just about 44 minutes past the hour. We'll be with you up until just about the top of the hour with...
Oh, well, can we have a few more hours?
Hey, it's okay with me. You get to tell Jeff to reprogram the thing. You're sitting with the ACB Radio Mainstream God over there, so... Now, tell me about food. Talk to me about that.
This is one of the reasons that we call the show the Spice Rack, because not only is there all different spices metaphorically, but Israel and the whole Middle East region is very... has a very rich food culture, and again, it's influenced by, you know, people coming from all different parts of the world. And I have to say, as a person coming from a typical Western background where, you know, we have fairly, you know, standard European taste in food mostly, it's been a wonderful experience learning, you know, and sampling all these different foods. And even when you try and get the equivalents in places like Australia, they're not the same as having the real deal here in Israel. The food is plentiful, it's relatively cheap, and it's good quality on the whole.
Well, we like to eat, and anyone who's seen us will know that right away. But no, we do like to eat. We do like to sample new things. I really like to cook, and I do different things, and that's one of the reasons I give a recipe every week on the Spice Rack. Like Jeff said, it is very much influenced by, you can get pretty much anything in Israel, from pizza to Thai food to, you know, the American style fast food. You know, we even have, you know, Burger King, McDonald's, all those here.
And you can get home delivered too, man.
Yeah. But Israel has, you know, some authentic flavors, Middle Eastern flavors. We use, lots of fresh vegetables in our cooking. It's one of the most essential ingredients in Israeli cooking. I mean, yes, we have our meat, chicken, fish, whatever, but fresh ingredients, that's what really makes Israeli food, Middle Eastern food, Mediterranean food, what it is. Fresh vegetables, olive oil, garlic, fresh herbs, real things. We don't use a lot of, I mean, yes, you can get nowadays, you can get all those frozen things and heat them up in the microwave, but most people I know still make their own. You know, when we make vegetable soup, we don't pour it out of a can. We slice up all the fresh vegetables that you get
yum.
From the market or from the soup.
And man, it tastes good.
We make, things with meat, we buy fresh meat from the butcher. You know, every supermarket has a butcher there that you can, like I said, a lot of people who work long hours do the frozen dinner thing, but there's nothing like the fresh taste, the olive oil, the garlic, the aroma that comes out of the kitchen when you're cooking.
Or other people's kitchens.
Well,
smell things sometimes. Like, oh, wow, smell that.
Well, now, we have a call, but before we take the call, now, I did tell you that I was coming over Tuesday, right? Okay, let's bring the call in. Hi there, you're with Nama, Jeff, and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, this is Alice.
Hello, Alice.
Hi. I had a question for Nikki and Jeff regarding, I know that, Nama, you've traveled.
This is the person who came all the way from the States to go to our wedding.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm a friend of the family.
This is like my best friend from high school.
Oh, this is great. Well, you guys just chat a while.
Well, I just wanted to ask.
What was your question?
Well, hello, first of all, and Happy New Year.
Hey!
I want to find out, in your travels of living in the U.S. and living in Australia and living in Israel, what's one particular favorite thing that you remember from each country that is your most favorite thing?
Oh, wow.
From Australia, it's you coming to our wedding.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, you don't understand, folks. This is one of the most amazing amazing people on this planet. I'm not exaggerating. She went with me to high school in Miami, and we've been friends ever since. And it's just amazing how, you know, they talk about some true friendships, and this is an example. You know, flying across the Pacific just to come to my wedding in Australia, it was just, and other things. And okay, anyway, to answer your question. No, this is really amazing for me. To answer your question, favorite thing from Australia, and it, yes, it is to come to your to our wedding, but also I liked, loved the kangaroos. I really did. Yes. I really loved the kangaroos. We went to this park in Sydney, and we got to pet the kangaroos and feel the koalas, and it's amazing. It's amazing how much wildlife there is in Australia, and that really amazes me. And also the mentality of everything's cool, we're laid back kind of people.
She'll be right, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that about Australia. What I like about the United States is at least in the education that I got and the training I got as a singer, and, you know, where I went to high school and college, I really appreciate the training for professionalism. For, you know, if you're going to do something, be professional about it. That's the kind of education that I experienced in the U.S., and I really love it. And love those tacos.
Oh, my gosh.
In Israel, I would have to say the food is right up there, I have to say. The food is fantastic.
Yeah, I remember really when I came to visit you guys in Australia, Nama was telling me how wonderful and fresh and just delicious. I mean, Marlena, you mentioned, could you come over to dinner?
Yeah.
I remember thinking the same thing when I was listening to them talk about Israel. I'm like, okay, so when am I coming to visit you in Israel and we'll have dinner?
Well,
Alice is a good cook, too.
I'll tell you what, Alice, I'll pick you up along the way and we'll both crash their house.
It's a date.
No, just let us know when you're coming.
Oh, absolutely.
Melania, you do your show from here at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, goodness. Speaking of favorite things, when I was in Australia visiting you guys, there were those cookies. Do you remember which ones I'm talking about? They were the chocolate ones with raspberry or something in them.
Oh, mint slice and mandarin slice. I love the mandarin slice.
Yeah.
The chocolate with kind of an orangey taste in the middle.
Yeah, in the U.S. They make something similar. It's called Pimm's. I think, Tim's, and it's a dark chocolate on the outside with, like, a crispy wafer and, like, a jam middle in between the chocolate and the wafer.
Well, I can tell you in the United States, I like those Pepperidge Farm cookies.
I don't know, but you guys are making me really hungry.
There's nothing better than getting together with good friends and food, I have to say.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's a very Israeli attitude, too. People get together for meals and such. Friday night dinner is a very common thing here as a cultural tradition. Even though a lot of the population isn't like, you know, hardcore religious, a lot of the religious traditions have still, you know, like Friday night dinner, you know, Sabbath dinner and stuff have kind of carried through. And people like, you know, that idea of being able to get together on the weekend and, you know, either eat Friday night dinner together or Saturday lunch or, you know, those sorts of things. And you catch up with the family and all that sort of thing. And I've enjoyed getting to know Nama's family because her mother doesn't live here, but both of her sisters live here and they've both got families. And I've enjoyed getting to know them. And as particularly the kids' English gets better and my Hebrew gets better, I'm starting to get to know them, which is a good thing.
Absolutely.
Well, Alice, I'm glad that you called because no one could have surprised Nama any more than you did.
Yeah, I wonder if the mom network was happening there.
The phone lines were burning up down here in Florida, I have to say.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
This is wonderful. Thank you. And Thanks, Mom, for letting Alice know.
Thanks, Mom, for letting Alice know. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Happy New Year to all of you and to Namah's mom.
Well,
and, it was wonderful to chat with you guys. Take care for now.
All right. Thanks,
you
Alice.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Nama Aries, this is your life. No. that used to be a television program on years and years ago.
We had it 2 years.
Nama Aries, this is your life.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we're just about ready to wrap up. And at this point, I always sort of like to be quiet for a couple of minutes and give my guests the opportunity to talk about or comment on anything that they would like that I hadn't asked, or maybe go back and hit another point. And I hear Jeff has something on his mind.
Oh, no, I don't. I was just thinking, as an interviewer, that's what I often ask people.
Oh, well, there you go.
Anything you want to talk about that, you know, I go, oh, boy. Do you have anything, Nama?
Well, not really. Again, I like to stress how much, you know, how people think about blindness-related issues all over the world. And like I said before, every place, every system has its advantages and disadvantages. And I'm so grateful to the, you know, to the Internet and to ACB Radio that we could actually share all that. And really, I mean, the from someone who, like, you know, 3 years ago didn't even know about the existence of ACB Radio, for it to have so much influence and on my life, I'm just so grateful, and I'm so glad about this project and about everything and about this show. And I can't believe it's 5 o'clock in the morning and I can keep going and going and going. You just got me started.
Well, I'll have to bring you on again, and I'll say, okay, Nama, here's where you left off. Now, keep going.
Well, I guess I'd just like to quickly say, because we've been talking about Israel, and I hope that we've been able to give people a bit of a picture. I've been living here now for a bit over 8 months, and I would say if you've thought about coming to visit Israel, either as a tourist or if you are religious in any of the three major religions,
yes,
in particular.
Yes, because it is amazing for all religions, really.
And even if you're not, there's so many places that have cultural significance here. You know, do come. It's you know, mostly a quite a safe place. They've got good tourism available. We had our own tour guide for our tour of the Old City of Jerusalem. It was fantastic. I'd highly recommend him to anyone who wants to know about him. Come visit the place. It's an interesting place. You won't be disappointed, I'm sure.
No,
I should get a sales job.
And Marlena, you should come to Israel. Really, I'd love to meet you, and we'll show you guys around, and you won't regret it.
Well, I hope that happens, and I'd love to meet the both of you. And why don't you let folks know again when the Spice Rack is on?
Yes.
Very briefly, the Spice Rack on ACB Radio World. That's at www.acbradio.org/world. We're on live at 8 GMT on Tuesday morning. That's 10 a.m. here in Israel, 3 a.m. U.S. Eastern, midnight Pacific at the moment. That's when we're on live. And it's repeated on a Saturday at 17 GMT, which is 7 p.m. here in Israel. That's noon Eastern, 9 Pacific.
Thank you so much, Nama Aries and Jeff Shang. Thank you for being with us. And it's been a joy. The 2 hours flew, and let's do it again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's right. Absolutely. Thank you. We're going to go out with a different song, a song that was written about the World Blind Union. We're also going to send it out to Nama and Jeff, because it talks about the power of the dream, changing what it means to be blind. I'm Marlena. Happy, happy New Year. I'll be back next week. Have a great one.
The sound of thunder, singing the dream to opening ears all over the world. There's a buzz in the air, and the people from far and near have made a choice. The choice is clear. Changing what it means to be blind.
step by step, one day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be at the sighted eyes of the world. We'll be able to see that there will be changes. The power of the dream, due diligence by you and me, changing what it means to be blind. Women of every nation are rising to the occasion to change humankind by movement and mind. We shall be as one. What of youth and children? Empowerment is their freedom. And we must convey by example so they can say,